The Financial Times guides you through complex issues. In divisive times, don't settle for black and white. When you need the full perspective, turn to FT.com. Become a subscriber today. Search for FT subscription.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1057. It is the 2nd of May, 2018. By the way, we have a new podcast series. Check it out, and you'll see that at voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. And it talks to people, high profile people, really, in the world of business. So it's voxmarkets.co.uk/businesslives. Okay, on the podcast today, I have Andrew Pralaya, Chief Executive Officer of Vast Resources, VAST, and Andrew discusses their MOU with Botswana Diamonds, their acquisition of 23.75% of the Eureka Gold Mine in Zimbabwe, and progress at other parts of the business. Also on the podcast, Leon Kutzer, Chief Executive Officer of Jubilee Metals Group, JLP, this ticker there. And Leon talks about the execution of both a shareholders agreement and operating agreement with the BMR Group to jointly pursue the Kabwe Surface Zinc Lead and Vanadium project in Zambia. Also on the podcast, Hayden Locke, Business Development Manager at Kora Gold. That's C-O-R-A. And Hayden discusses their recent drill results at the Sanankoro and Tekeledugu gold projects in Mali. And as it's Wednesday, I have John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel, talking about the following companies: Kodal Minerals, KOD, Savannah Resources, SAV, Amma Minerals, AMC, and Blue Jay Mining, J-A-Y. And as always, I have the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Pralaya, Chief Executive Officer of Vast Resources. V-A-S-T is the ticker there. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much. Always a pleasure.
Now, you've been very busy of late. Not saying it's not busy always, but especially of late. You've had several bits of news out, and we'll cover that in a bit. Before we do, Andrew, just for anyone listening who's not familiar with Vast or new to the podcast, just summarise the business, if you could.
Certainly. Vast Resources is was an exploration company that was founded in 2003, listed in 2006. It's now emerged into a producer and developer in two jurisdictions, Zimbabwe and Romania. We're mining polymetallics in Romania and predominantly gold at the moment in Zimbabwe. And we're in production in both jurisdictions, and both are doing very well.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's go back to the news of late you've had out, and you've acquired just under 24% economic interest in the Eureka Gold Mine in Zimbabwe. Take us through the details of that, if you could.
Yeah, we've been looking at opportunities in Zimbabwe, and now that, as the Zimbabwean government has said, we're open for business, we're looking at new gold opportunities together with our strategic partners in Zimbabwe. We found the Eureka mine, which is a historical mine that was in care and maintenance. It's got a very sizable resource, and it was really only closed down due to the economic crisis in Zimbabwe. It's not an easy mine. It's in a hard granite, but the average grades are good. All the infrastructure's in place, and now we're just working on the best and most economical solution to get it operational again.
Yeah.
So it was a fantastic acquisition where we've negotiated effectively. Vast has not had to put any money in. We have just under 25% carried interest, and we are looking for, you know, to bring it to near-term production as fast as possible. We're on the ground there now. They're already clearing. I was out there last week. Being sitting for over 10 years doing nothing, it's in remarkable condition. And now we're just looking at the best solutions to bring it to near-term cash flow to add to our portfolio in Zimbabwe.
Yeah, and when you say near-term or short-term, what are you talking there? Are you talking before the end of the year?
Well, it depends on which approach we take. Historically, it was leached with a heap leach, which didn't prove economically viable at the time, but may very well do so now. And if we decide to go with a heap leach, it will be somewhere in the next 6 to 9 months. If we want to go through a full milling and grinding circuit, it might take a little bit longer. But I'd like to reiterate that at this point in time, Vast has not had to put any of its funds in there. It was part of the agreement we had with our strategic partners. They've done an incredible job in Pixton Peerless. And we anticipate they'll be doing the same again at Eureka for us, working together with our technical team and their technical team. We believe that we can make it a very profitable mine, as we have done so with Pixton.
Yeah, and you say that Zimbabwe is now open for business, the new government, so they are, and you obviously are taking advantage of that because you've signed an MOU, of course, recently with to exploit the diamonds in Zimbabwe. So take us through that MOU, if you could.
Well, Botswana Diamonds has an incredible technical history. Their managing director, you know, was at De Beers, then at Rockwells, and he understands Zimbabwe very well. We were an exploration company that were focused in diamonds as well as gold in the mid to late 2000s, and we have an incredible database between the two of us and incredible knowledge of Zimbabwe. And we believe that it's now the right time to pull our resources together to have a look at the opportunities that were left behind. Because of the opening of Zimbabwe, we think it's an incredible time to, let's say, revisit old claims.
Yeah, yeah. And well, we've had James on the podcast, you know, talking about from Botswana Diamonds. So maybe he'll come on again. So, yeah, nice guy. So, excellent.
He's a lovely guy.
Yeah, yeah. So, concerning these two projects, well, a couple of questions come in, and some you know, investors saying, so why are you looking at other assets if you have great assets already?
Well, we have great assets that are in production. Pixton Peerless has proven to be a world-class operation, not in size, but definitely in quality. It's fully automated. They've done an incredible job, the management team there. We did a lot of drilling and historical work on Pixton before we sold most of the asset to our partners. And that is operational. Now is the time to move to the next phase in Zimbabwe. And it's very much the same in Romania. They're both very underdeveloped countries. Zimbabwe more so because of political stability historically, Romania because of the decision to close the mining down in 2006. But both countries are phenomenally rich in resources. And because we have two operational teams that are performing, you know, extremely well, it's now time, as a CEO, to look at the next phase of growth for the company. So what we're trying to do now is to put our foot down on as many assets that we believe we can possibly handle, within reason, obviously, that are going to add value to shareholders. And if you look at Pixton, it's making money. It's making a considerable amount of money. And now it's time to grow to the next phase, looking at Eureka and others. And in Romania, Manaila is performing. The pre-stripping and the upgrading in the production facility is working. There's nothing more we can do on the new processing plant until we get all the permitting and approval, which won't happen till July, August this year. So, you know, we've got these wonderful teams that have the incredible capabilities, and we may as well leverage off those capabilities. And as a result of our recent funding deal, we have a lot of financial parties interested in funding this growth path of VAST. So if we can do it without having to go to shareholders and raise money, and we can manage it technically, then it's time for us to grow. And yeah, That's what we're focused on doing.
Yeah, yeah. I'll leave the big question to last, but one in between here. And and that is, where are the quarterly results?
Well, the quarterly results, we had two sets of Easters in April, one in the UK and one in Romania, and then we've just had the bank holiday. So the quarterlies are prepared and will be due. Well, I think I mentioned it earlier this month, last month, is that we were going to be late this month because of this holiday season. We're going to be getting them out probably early to mid next week is what our plan is.
Okay, and the biggie that I always get asked when it says, is Andrew coming on? Is someone from VAST come on the podcast? Can you ask them about this? So the BP license, what's happening with it? And in fact, for people, maybe this is the first time they've listened to you on the podcast, can you also give a bit of a background as to what the BP is and explain why it's significant for VAST?
Well, Bayard Supply was an asset that we bought. We actually optioned back in 2014, and then we bought it in 2015. But it was a very, very difficult mine because of its sensitivity. It's a highly rich mine, high in resource, high grade. It's got somewhere in the vicinity of $60 to $80 million of infrastructure. When we bought it, it was in bankruptcy. We pulled it out of bankruptcy, and there were a lot of interest at that particular mine. So we've been working with the authorities to unravel the history and to bring it so it would be a clean operation once we're operational. There's no use in acquiring something, starting it, and then be shut down in 2 years' time after investing money into it. So the whole idea is to make sure that everything is clean, everything is perfect, and that it operates for the next 15, 20 years without any headache or interference. So it's taken a little bit longer than anticipated, But we are very close. I'm not going to use the word imminent or shortly or give a specific timeline, but I can say that we've made rapid inroads into resolving the issue, and we hope to be announcing to the market as soon as possible.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, when you get involved in any sort of jurisdiction or any sort of authority or government anywhere around the world, it can take longer than expected, even in this country. Like I said, I've chatted to, you know, CEOs of oil and gas companies who expect results or news to be out in next month or so, and it's taken up to a year. So, you know, I'm not saying that's going to happen with you, but you never can predict, can you, how long things will take, you know? So it's always a dangerous game to say it's happening soon because, you know.
That's right. Very confident it is going to happen, and we're not talking about a long period of time. As I said, we're very close. We've given an undertaking not to make any announcements until everything is signed, sealed, and delivered. So as soon as everything is signed, sealed, and delivered, the market will know. But we are extremely confident that it'll be resolved.
Marvellous. One final thing, Andrew, for someone listening right now and liking the sound of this and the progress you're making, but are not yet following you, could you give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please?
We're multi-jurisdictional, we're multi-commodity, we're producing in both Zimbabwe and Romania. Both operations are now going very, very well. Pixton Peerless is making money for our shareholders, and as is Manaila now. Manaila is also working. All the work, hard work and the persistence that we've been through over the course of the last 2 years is now paying off. We have a wonderful off-taker. We have wonderful finance opportunities and financial facilities in place, and we're looking forward to a rapid growth of the company.
Marvellous stuff. Good to chat to you, Andrew, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Great. Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Leon Coates here, Chief Executive Officer of Jubilee Metals Group. That's JLP ticker. Leon, thanks for joining me.
Oh, thanks, Justin. Good morning.
I know, especially thanks for taking the time, because I know you're just about to jump on a plane, and you are actually in the airport, so thanks for talking to us. But you've had some significant news out, and we'll, you know, like to cover that. So before we do, though, Leon, for people new to the podcast or not aware of your company, can you explain what Jubilee Metals is all about, please?
Sure, thanks, Justin. Just to quickly recap again, I mean, Jubilee Metals Group is a company that specializes in the recovery of metals from surface materials. We are a company operating facilities in South Africa and have assets in Australia, and as we announced this morning, are now expanding into Zambia as well.
Excellent stuff. Okay, so the RNS of the day, the news is that Jubilee executes Kabwe projects agreements. So take us through what this means and the significance, please, especially sort of for shareholders, I suppose.
Yeah, thanks, Justin. Yeah, I mean, we told shareholders last year that, you know, on the back of the success we're having in South Africa with our operations operating well, being profitable with strong margins, that we would expand our footprint outside of just precious metals and chrome, and also expand into base metals, and specifically expand across mining jurisdictions. And we told shareholders that Zambia, amongst others, would be a key focus for us. And we entered into a term sheet last year that sort of stipulated the terms that we were pursuing for the Kabwe project in Zambia. And we were happy to announce this morning that, in fact, we've taken the term sheet and we've executed both the shareholders' agreement, which basically gives Jubilee the right to earn into a 40% position of that project, of the joint venture company that owns that project, as well as the fact that Jubilee has been appointed as the operating company. In essence, what that means is that Jubilee will actually, on behalf of BMR PLC, who owns the subsidiary EPL, who owns the Kabwe project, that Jubilee will execute that project on their behalf. We therefore will be responsible for putting together the business plan, the funding structures, the design, execution, and operation of the facility will fall under Jubilee's responsibility. And how the earn-in works, it's quite favorable for Jubilee in that we will be investing into the project under a loan agreement, which means that the investment we make has a preferential repayment of that loan prior to any distribution of income. We have committed to invest a further £2 million as a loan into that project to reach the 40% position, where after, if further funding is required, the shareholders, which will be BMR and Jubilee, has to fund para pursuit to their shareholding, or if one party is unable to fund, the other party would dilute that party in providing the funding. So that's where we are. It's a very exciting project. It's a project that contains zinc, lead, and vanadium at surface. It's approximately 6.5 million tons lying on surface already, with the potential of being very profitable, the project. And our next step is why I'm on the airport. We're off to Zambia to present our business plan to the Zambian authorities and also to mobilize our team on the project to commence with the detailed execution plans of that project.
Excellent stuff. Well, you know, I'm just going to say you actually answered my next question. I said, can you take us through some of the details of Kabwe? But you just did that perfectly, Leon. So that's you summed that up. So before you go, before you hop on your plane, I know you've got 5-10 minutes till you get on there. Give us 3 quick reasons, Leon, why someone listening right now should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, I suppose the first thing is that, you know, if you look at our quarter-on-quarter results, Jubilee is not only a profitable company, but it's also on a trajectory where its earnings is growing quarter-on-quarter. And I've no doubt that our next quarter will be have similar growth than what we had shown in the first quarter of 2018. The second point is as promised to shareholders, we are a company diversifying out of just South Africa. And diversifying into various base metals, all focusing on base metals that are sort of the hot metals of today, leading into energy and energy sources. And also the fact that we, beyond just the Skabwe project, we have a pipeline stacked with exciting projects we are planning to execute over the next 2 years.
Excellent stuff, Leon. Good to chat to you. Have a nice journey, and hopefully we chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Hayden Locke, Business Development Manager at Kora Gold, at C-O-R-A. Hayden, thanks for joining me.
Thanks very much, Justin.
Now, I'm sure listeners will be familiar with John, who's the CEO, he's over in Mali, is that right at the moment?
That's right. He's on the ground working with the geos on following up these exciting drill results from the Tekladuga discovery.
Yeah, well, we'll go into that in a bit. Before we do, for people new to the podcast or not heard of Kora, because Kora's not been around that long, can you explain what the business is all about, please, Hayden?
Absolutely. Kora is a West Africa-focused gold exploration company. It's got a fairly significant land position in 2 prolific gold belts in Mali in West Africa. And as many people would be aware, Mali over the last 20 years has been one of the most successful jurisdictions in terms of large-scale gold discoveries, with a number of multi-million ounce discoveries occurring there. Management's led by John Forster, who you just mentioned, who's a renowned geologist in West Africa, but particularly in Mali, where he's been working for the last 20 years. And he's been personally responsible for the discovery of nearly 9 million ounces of gold in West Africa. The primary focus of the company is on the 2 new discoveries, one at Sanankoro, which we've put out quite a bit of news flow and drilling results on, and the second, which you just mentioned, at Tekladugu, which our geologists are very, very excited about, and the geological team believe that both have the potential to yield million-plus deposits in their own right.
Yeah, well, take us through, as you described, these in the RNS here, high-grade drill results from the Tekladugu gold permit, and what you know so far, if you could, Hayden.
Absolutely. So Tekladugu is actually the second permit, and it's a relatively new discovery. There are 2 separate structures, one called Wayoni and one called Karudian. They're located, interestingly, within about 10 kilometres of Hummingbird Yanfalila gold mine, which is obviously, if you make a discovery within close proximity to an operating plant, it can potentially lead to early stage cash flow. Mm-hmm. The Wayoni discovery delivered some absolutely exceptional early stage results, including 56 metres at 2.2 grams per tonne of gold, so broad zones of relatively high-grade mineralisation. Importantly, from just 48 metres downhole, which means that this is probably in the 30 to 35 metres below surface range, so very shallow. Mm-hmm. In fact, all of the drilling results along this structure were relatively shallow, and it confirmed strong continuity of mineralization across the full 250 meters of strike. The geometry of the structures that are bearing the mineralization is broad and fairly continuous, which leads us to believe that there's the potential there'll be amenable to bulk mining methodologies, which is really positive from both a technical and economic standpoint. To put those drill holes into context, I think it's important to put them into context because, you know, 56 metres at 2.2 grams a tonne may not be something that people are aware of, but the Fekola deposit, which is now owned by B2 Gold and is over a 5 million ounce deposit, the discovery hole at Fekola was around 30 metres at 3 grams a tonne. So this initial result compares very favourably to what is really one of the best gold discoveries in the last 10 years or so in Mali.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was looking at the other bit. So what's next here then, Hayden?
So I guess we take a step back. There's also another announcement that went out on the Sanicoro discovery. And really that one was released on the 24th of April. Mm-hmm. And the goal of that drilling was really to connect two mineralized zones that we knew were mineralized from historical drilling and drilling that we conducted. And that drilling was successful. So we've now joined those two gold zones together into a 3.6 kilometre continuous strike zone of mineralised structure. And I think that is quite significant scale when you start talking about gold deposits in this part of the world. So we really have a multitude of potential exploration targets to follow up on with the potential to deliver resources. So what's next for us is John is obviously on the ground really refining the strategy and working out where the best use of our funds is going to be. And the next phase of drilling will hopefully occur before the wet season with the intention of really assessing how these structures either at Tekladugu or Sanicoro hang together with one eye on potentially delivering a resource.
Yeah, and so at this stage, like you say, it's, you know, exploration still, but it's looking good. And how good would you say at this stage it is looking? Is it exceeding expectations there?
I would say it's probably meeting expectations. We had fairly high expectations for both the Sanicoro discovery from an early stage, and it's certainly meeting those expectations in terms of the scale that we had been talking about originally. Tekladugu, I think, is absolutely exceeding expectations, primarily because it's never been drilled before, there's never been any exploration work done on it, and some of those results are absolutely stellar. So I think Tekladugu is exceeding expectations, and Sanicoro is very much meeting expectations.
Yeah, excellent stuff. Okay, and Hayden, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of it, because I mean, at the moment, I'm looking at the market cap of Kora Gold. It doesn't take a lot to move the needle here. You are sub sort of 8 million market cap, which I know a lot of listeners to this podcast like that kind of size company. So if they are listening, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox Markets and add you to their watch list, please.
Well, Kora has three very exciting gold discoveries to conduct follow-up work on. So Sanicoro, which has a huge footprint and of continuous mineralized strike, and the Tekladugu result, which is discovery, which delivered some amazing results yesterday and is very close to an operating mine. The early stage drilling at Tekladugu in particular were broad, high-grade results from surface, and we'll look to follow up on those as soon as possible. And the company believes that each of these discoveries has the potential to deliver significant resources, potentially in excess of 1 million ounce, and we'll be following up with our exploration work with that objective in mind.
Marvellous stuff. Hayden, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll chat again in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thanks very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me in the podcast right now is John Mayer, mining analyst and partner at SP Angel. All right, John.
Yes, good. Thank you.
Yeah, well, listen, the weather's dreadful, but you bring a bit of sunshine here, John, with your information and updates. So first and foremost, let's, I know we've talked about Kodal Minerals. They had a release out this week concerning lithium. And as far as the lithium market is concerned, you know, what's your thoughts on that? Because everyone assumes it's going to be massive, isn't it, for lithium batteries. Is that still the case?
Well, there are detractors out there who are suggesting that the lithium market will come down. But I think the experts on balance see, well, so everybody sees the market is continuing to grow. And I think on balance, the experts reckon that the demand will continue to outpace supply. And that's the important bit from a pricing perspective, because so long as demand keeps running ahead of supply, then buyers are going to be competing with each other to get hold of lithium feedstock. And that's where the miners come in. They're looking to feed this market of very strong demand.
Yeah. Well, exactly. And I think was the thing they were saying was 30% of cars by 2030 it will be on battery driven rather than sort of petrol or fossil fuel and all that stuff. So it's a massive demand going to create that. But anyway, let's specifically go into Codal. What's the news there, John?
Well, news from Codal is on some of the drilling results. They announced a very good result, which was one of the holes drilled in December. They hadn't previously announced that. I think it was 1.6%. I mean, good grades. Plus results from a bunch of new drill holes and showing multiple seams of multiple pegmatite veins with lithium grades. Almost all of those grades looking very, very respectable. I mean, the project looks like it will run about 1.5% lithium, maybe even higher. We saw results out of Birimian, who have the project next door in Mali, mm-hmm. Major increase in their JORC resource there. And very important to see that, because if Birimian build their project, then there'll be lots of infrastructure and precedent for Codal building their own. And I don't think Codal's project is going to be any smaller. In fact, if anything, it looks like it's going to be better quality material and slightly better grade. So it may be that somebody says, okay, well, maybe we buy Birimian and we buy, if you're going to buy Birimian, you buy Codal next door, or perhaps you just buy Codal. So I think Codal is very much in the frame with the results that it's producing. It says it's just starting the bulk sample now. They've upgraded the road to get in there. They've got a digger on site, and they're going to ship 5,000 tons of spodumene material for metallurgical testing. So that will go to various laboratories, I think in Australia, and then over to China for the Chinese to test the concentrate. So that's positive moves forwards for Codal.
Yeah, and it's worth saying here that they do have that Chinese investor, and we know the Chinese are keeping a very keen eye on this lithium market, because I think they are the biggest market at the moment, aren't they, for lithium? So they need to sort of secure that supply chain. And as you say, having those two projects next to each other would, I suppose, if they're both very economically viable and have that infrastructure shared there, that's it's very tempting, wouldn't it be, for a sort of big Chinese lithium investor there to come in and just buy them, wouldn't it? I suppose.
Well, Codal are well placed, because the Chinese really want to control the market, and whilst they've got a foothold into Codal, they're not controlling it by any means. China is having a tussle with the government of Chile at the moment, because the Chileans are not sure that they want the Chinese owning one of the big projects over there in Chile, and so I think what that means is the Chinese will be running around the world trying to grab whatever else they can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And cool. So that's Codal, and they're heading towards that resource. So, do you have any idea of the size as yet of that what the resource will be?
No, difficult to know right now. I wouldn't expect it to come out as a first resource number at the scale of Birimian.
Yeah.
But there may be an indicated resource that's quite large. Sorry, an inferred resource that's quite large.
Yeah.
You've got to do more drilling to get that into an indicated or a measured category.
Mm-hmm.
That's lots of infill drilling. That takes time and money. And simply, you don't really want to be doing that just yet. You want to show that you've got a sort of good economic portion within the ore body, and then you want to show that you've got scale as well. And then you can probably run the economic model off the back of the numbers being produced by Birimian. And the Birimian limited statement that came out at the end of last week also show, because it's a JORC resource, shows quite a lot of economic parameters and metallurgical work and other details, which are very useful for us and other experts to look at from a project evaluation perspective. The Australians are simply not allowed to just throw numbers into the market without backing them up and justifying that there is some economic reality behind the project.
Yeah, of course. Okay, well, talking about lithium, I know in your newsletter, daily newsletter I read, you've covered sort of Savannah Resources, SAV ticker, and they're involved in lithium as well. So what are they saying today, John?
Yeah, they were early movers into the European lithium operation. They put their hands on a project in Portugal because lithium has been mined in Portugal for centuries. It's used in the ceramic industry because it comes out with the fluorspar, and I think the lithium gives that fluorspar and the ceramics certain qualities that they like, presumably the customers like. And they've been drilling this project, and now that shows itself to be the largest lithium resource in Europe. The grade's less than we see at Codal. It's 1.1% lithium, but it is in Europe. Portugal is not. It's not always been a favoured mining place. The unions can be a bit tricky over there, but let's not take the credit away from them. It is a good scale resource. I believe it's very uniform, and given that that the European auto manufacturers are keen to find local sources of supply, it may find the financing slightly easier than some others.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Marvelous stuff. So lithium, and also mentioned in your letter there, which I know I've had Robin, the CEO, on the podcast several times, is AME Minerals, AMC ticker. Now they've got a big old project out there in the far east of Russia. It is, and they've come up with some decent figures of late. And today's figure shows they're quite low cost as well, potentially low cost.
Yes. The figures today show that costs are around $6,000 a ton, which, when you consider that nickel is selling at just under $14,000, gives you a margin of $8,000. And they need a good margin because they're going to have to support quite a large capital cost for the project. But it is good news to see that it's a low cost. It's world class, world scale, and it's a nickel sulfide project. And there are very, very few nickel sulfide discoveries around in the world these days. And nickel sulfide has the advantage because you can produce battery grade lithium hydroxide directly off nickel sulfide, so it is generally lower cost, and it's more conventional, and people like it. The problem with AME Minerals is the project is based in the far east of Russia. It's in a slightly remote location. They'll have to build an expensive road to get in there, but at some point the Russians are going to want to own this, and if it's not the Russians, it'll be the Chinese. So one might expect, if the Chinese look as if they're about to buy it, maybe the Russians will come in, although I have to say the Russians don't seem to have an awful lot of spare cash at the moment due to the impact of sanctions. So difficult to know exactly what's going to happen here. It's a bit of a waiting game, but Robin and the boys are doing a good job proving up the economics of that project, and at some stage somebody will fight over it.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, cool. Yeah, it's be interesting to see how far along they, you know, how much they have to develop it before there's a interest at that level, isn't it, really?
Well, the great thing is, I mean, it's considered to be a strategic or project of strategic interest in Russia, but the Russians have been very good to the company. They've given them all the licenses they've needed. They've been through the proper process. Law and order has been, shall we say, maintained in regard to this particular project. So the company has continued to work within the rules and regulations in Russia, and everything has gone okay.
Mm-hmm. Marvellous stuff. Well, maybe the Russians are okay. Maybe it's all just conspiracy and, who knows, propaganda from our side. Who can tell in this day and age, John? Where is the truth coming from? I don't know. But there we go. But marvellous. Anything else you want to chat about, John, before we go?
I thought we should mention Blue Jay.
Yeah.
Because there's quite a lot going on in the titanium mineral sand space. What we're seeing at the moment is Tronox, which is a big American titanium chemicals company, is consolidating, or is buying Cristal, or assets of Cristal. And there's a bit of anti-competition authority stuff going on there, so they're working their way through it. And you've also got Eramet, which announced a few days ago that it was going to buy the 50% of an Australian company called Mineral Deposits Limited that owns a joint venture, well, owns a project in Senegal, a titanium mineral sands mine that's been running for some years. So Eramet said, look, we don't want to share this with you anymore. We want to own the whole thing. And they're paying a 33% premium. The directors of Mineral Deposits Limited in Australia have said, don't accept the offer, don't do anything. I don't think Eramet, which is supported by the French government, is going to let that worry them. I think they've decided they want to own it, and they'll own it. And one has to wonder where they might go next. You know, we've seen other consolidation within the mineral sands industry. We saw Sierra Rutile being bought by Iluka, and Iluka have an ongoing history of buying assets. So I'm just wondering how long it takes before Blue Jay's taken out.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, cool. Marvellous stuff. Interesting stuff going on there. John, thanks for that, and we'll speak next week.
You're very welcome.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Feedback, FTPK. At four, Photonstar LED Group, PSL. At three, VR Education Holdings, VRE. At two, Innovaderma, IDP. And number one, most followed company, in fact, the second of the VR companies in the top five today, it's EVR Holdings, which is EVRH. Of course, they launched their new app today, Melody VR, with, in fact, 12 p.m. I don't know if it's our time or U.S. time, but Oculus, owned by Facebook, the VR company there, they're launching their sort of $200 sort of kit, which is a lot less than it was before, and that's part of an app within that. So they've got good connections with Facebook, of course. All right, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, 88 Energy, oversubscribed, placing to raise $17 million Australian dollars. At four, Highlands Natural Resources, spudding of the fourth well at East Denver Oil and Gas. At three, Berkeley Energia, intention to list on the main board, London Stock Exchange, and in Spain. At two, completion of placing, EVR Holdings, the EVRH, of course. And number one, it's EVRH at all, again, at all, successfully launches Melody VR platform. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciatos.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hear the intriguing stories behind some of the world's best love songs in the FT's Life of a Song podcast. From soul to funk, to punk to jazz. Discover how classic songs like Smells Like Teen Spirit, Yesterday, and Stairway to Heaven were born. Search online or listen at ft.com/podcasts. Plus, don't miss the new Life of a Song book, featuring a compilation of 50 songs that have appeared in FT weekend columns. Pick up your copy from Amazon, your local bookshop, or give a gift to someone who'd enjoy this brilliant literary mixtape.